There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that.
This is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile. Glad to have you here on this Wednesday. Live local talk over the next couple of hours. Lots to get into on today's show. Todd Stacey will join us in just a few minutes here. We'll talk with him about a couple things going on in Montgomery and some things going on in Birmingham when it comes to the Confederate monuments, what was done the other night in Birmingham by Mayor Woodfin, what the next step might be for the Attorney General Steve Marshall. That's coming up in just minutes. First of all, though, what we talked about this morning with our staff meteorologist, Dr. Bill Williams, tropical weather expert, is crystal ball. And Dr. Bill's in for an update now. Hey, Doc.
Good afternoon, Sean.
Afternoon. So now is it tropical storm crystal ball?
Yeah, it hasn't moved very much over the last 24 to 36 hours. It's way down in the southwestern Gulf along the coastline of Mexico, and it's kind of making a little loop in that area. It's over some very warm water, and it intensified into a tropical storm. It may go over some of the coastal areas of Mexico, which will cause it to decrease in intensity, and it may drop back to a depression. But then we expect it to start to move to the north and then go back out over the Gulf of Campeche or the southwestern Gulf. And once it does that, it will start to re-intensify. And the projection now is over the next 2 to 3 days, it will steadily move to the north out into the open Gulf and head for the central Gulf coast. And that means most likely it will be the coast of Louisiana Sunday night or early Monday morning.
Okay, so that puts us on the east side, which is the wet side.
Definitely the wet side in the case of a tropical storm. Even though it's not a hurricane, it is going to bring a lot of moisture from the Gulf of Mexico. And the rain we're getting right now in the area is not due to the tropical storm, which is far, far away. It's due to an upper air disturbance that's kind of moving through the area, and it's setting off a lot of showers and thunderstorms. But the real effects of that in the way of the rain will be over the weekend, Saturday and Sunday, and especially Sunday. We'll see a lot of thunderstorms and heavy showers move into our area. And then Sunday night and Monday morning when the storm reaches the coast, we expect it to be a strong tropical storm, possibly a minimal hurricane. It'll be far enough away that we will see some gale force gusts, but that'll be out over the coastal areas and offshore. And, of course, it'll be breezy here, but the big thing will be a lot of rain. And I wouldn't be surprised now that we have more than 6 inches of rain, maybe quite a bit more than that. We'll see as the storm develops over the next couple of days.
Okay, so, and that track is Sunday into Monday, but we should feel effects somewhat by Saturday, Friday, Saturday?
Saturday we'll start to get a lot of these heavy showers that will be on the eastern side due to all the moisture being brought up from the Caribbean and across the Gulf and be brought right into our area. So we'll expect quite a bit of rain. And certainly the number of showers and thunderstorms will increase on Sunday. And this will affect, of course, our area and southeast Mississippi and on over into Louisiana. But the worst of it should be over as far as winds would be over in Louisiana. And it could be the central coast, perhaps around Morgan City or farther west, maybe toward Lake Charles. That's right now where we expect the center to move in. Could it change a bit? Yeah, it could. We're going to be watching it very carefully because it hasn't moved out of that area in the southwest Gulf. When it does and starts to get some steering currents, we'll have a better idea of the timing.
Okay, you talk about the rainfall obviously could lead to flash flooding. What about coastal flooding from rising levels of the Gulf? You know, a place Dolphin Island, Gulf Shores, Orange Beach, up the bay.
Yeah, it'll most likely cause an increase in the tides. It all will depend on how strong the tropical storm becomes, but I'm sure we'll see some increases of maybe 1 to 2 feet, and there'll be some coastal flooding. And then flash flooding inland is very likely for certainly Sunday and into Monday. And we're going to see quite a bit of rain even into Tuesday before that system gradually moves well inland through Louisiana and on up toward Arkansas and Mississippi. But it'll be a rain event for us. And we're going to watch very carefully to get an idea of just how strong this system will become. And it looks like it's going to follow an opening between a high pressure to the east, high pressure to the west, and the area that is going up is right into Louisiana.
All right, and I guess the silver lining to this, many gray clouds, this may be the drought buster for us, do you think?
I think this will do it. Right now, we're more than 7 inches of rain below normal for the year, and I think we'll probably end up being above normal for the year by the time this moves out early next week.
Very good. Dr. Bill, we appreciate the update. We'll check back with you real soon.
Okay, Sean.
All right, there he is, our staff meteorologist, Dr. Bill Williams. His eye on the tropics all hurricane season long. By the way, just those of y'all that like to get out on the water like me, just to kind of give you an idea, not bad Friday. Still bad. 3 to 4 feet, that's bad for me. Saturday, 4 to 6, Saturday evening, 9 to 13. By Sunday, they're calling for 10 to 13 foot seas. So, just give you an idea. All right, Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News, joins us next.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile, which, by the way, you could vote for Midday Mobile in the Nappies, votenappies.com. It is online and voting is active as of about 17 minutes ago. Appreciate your votes we're always in this pickle. So I appreciate your vote for any of the shows, but we're in the situation that because we do 44 hours a week of live local programming, that we have many of our shows in competition against each other in the Nappies. That's okay. Pick your favorite of our shows and let her rip over at votenappies.com. All right, y'all say hello to my buddy, Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News, aldailynews.com, and good afternoon.
Hey, Sean, how's it going?
Did you see the asteroid story? There's maybe an asteroid coming near Earth. They don't think it's going to hit, but I just added that to, you know, the list of a pandemic here, a tough economy, huge unemployment numbers. Oh, yeah, distress and protest
murder
all over
hornets.
The country. Yeah, murder hornets. There were some locusts showed up in India. Now we got an asteroid on this. So other than that, I'm swell, man.
Our childhood heroes dying. I mean, yeah, it's 2020, pretty rough year. I why not an asteroid threat, you know?
Just add that on, cherry on top. So I want to get into a lot with you today, and I want folks to check out the website. We'll talk about aldailynews.com and the stories here. But I want to dig into, there's a thing you do each month I subscribe to that's Inside Alabama Politics, right? This is the wonky nerd stuff that I so very, very much enjoy. And you have a great one, a lot to talk about in there. And I do want to get into some of the politics of the Senate here in a little bit. But first, you have, I think, the best in-depth dive and discussion of what's happening now with the removal of the Confederate obelisk to soldiers and sailors in Birmingham, and then the response from the Attorney General Steve Marshall, and then you back it up and you lay out the case for what, you know, what law was violated. Can you do that for everybody? Let's take it back to 2017, kind of talk about what the law is on monuments, what happened in Birmingham, and what you see the response from the AG's office being.
Yeah, and you know, we like to go deep into these issues and not just cover the surface. From the surface, you saw what happened on live TV, right? Mm-hmm. There's protests in Birmingham. The protesters went after this Confederate monument. Of course, they've been after it for a while. This really started 2 years ago or 3 years ago, back in 2017. Back then, the previous mayor, William Bell, set up a big, covering, a wooden structure around the statue so you couldn't see it. And so in response, the state passed a law that said you couldn't... doing such things, tearing monuments down, even covering them up, was against the law. That act passed in 2017, and the state and the city went to court over this. The Supreme Court eventually ruled that, yes, this was a constitutional law, but instead of fining the city $25,000 per day, they could only fine them once. And so that has become very relevant. And, you know, some state lawmakers intended this law to be a deterrent, right? To keep cities, mm-hmm. to keep counties from allowing, from tearing down, Civil War Confederate monuments. But as it has been interpreted, it's really not much of a deterrent. $25,000 is a fine that the only recourse the state has to, you know, to punish cities, to penalize cities that do this. And so you know, Mayor Randall Woodfin, the new mayor, he promised the protesters, look, don't tear down this statue. Give me 24 hours and I'll have it down. And so then he began to scramble to figure out, okay, how do I do this? He called the governor. He called the lieutenant governor. And eventually he called the person who's responsible for enforcing that law, and that's the attorney general. And they basically worked it out. I mean, the attorney general said, look, I have no choice. I have to carry out this law, to enforce this law, and I will do that. If y'all take down the statue, then I'm going to sue the city for exactly how the law says. But also, I can't do more than the law says. It says $25,000, and that was an easy price to pay for the city to please many of its citizens that really don't want this statue up anymore.
So, okay, so for a period of time, the solution was to... it's covered up with plywood. All right, now that that it's come down, which I'm going to ask you, do you know where it's going next? But that 25, because in reading the AG's memo that came out, I think yesterday or day before, I think yesterday, it sounded like maybe there were some other. They can't just pay the $25,000, right? They got to go through the lawsuit on this, or.
Well, yeah, that would be a judge. In the, you know, the state just doesn't send a bill, right? This is a penalty. And so
you have to have a day in court.
Right. The state has sued. They'll have a day in court. The judge will, I would imagine it would be pretty easy if all sides agree to say, okay, yeah, now you've got to pay the state $25,000. It will be kind of interesting to see what if the state puts that $25,000 to a certain use, you know, this being such a big issue.
General fund.
Well, yeah, but I mean, I wonder if somebody could direct it in some form or fashion. And that's just me. I think mm-hmm. about these things.
I asked that
but
question
you asked about
too.
Where the statue is going. I've heard from sources that the sons and daughters of the Confederacy are trying to get a hold of it. I don't know if they've been successful, but there are groups out there that.
Well, who owns it, by the way? I mean, is it owned by the city of Birmingham? Is it owned by the Sons and Daughters of the Confederacy? Who owns it?
That's a good question. I mean, it was in a city park, right? This was not a state property or anything like that. So I'd say it's probably the city. But obviously, there are some groups out there that don't want to see it thrown away. They want to see it preserved in some form or fashion. Of course, you know, it was badly vandalized. I mean, spray painted. Really badly, so I don't even know how salvageable it is. But I do know that some groups out there are trying to get a hold of it to preserve it.
And in your understanding of the way the law is, let's say there's a new mayor one day. Woodfin is, somebody else is now mayor. They decide for some reason they want it back. Would they, because it is on city property, could they make the decision to bring it back and put it back there?
I suppose so.
I'm not saying it's going to happen. I'm just trying to understand the law, you know.
I think the city can build pretty much whatever it wants to build on a public park. I don't know the origins of this statue. I know it was, I think they said it's 115 years mm-hmm. old. And, I mean, this is one of many statues, right?
Right. That's what I'm trying to learn, because I think this is going to be applied on down. I think this will be, whatever happens here with the situation with Birmingham will be a precedent set for other places in Alabama.
Oh, absolutely. And that's really the point of what I was writing today, was that, look, this the legislature, actually, the sponsor of this law, Gerald Allen, they understood that there's a limitation as far as the effectiveness of this law. So they actually tried to amend it in this past legislative session. That bill got carried over, didn't go anywhere. But they're aware that there's no real deterrent. If a city wants to pay $25,000 and remove a monument, they can do that. And so it really just becomes kind of a one-time fee. Now, some people might say, hey, that's the way it should be. Some people may say, no, the state really needs to more teeth in stopping places from removing historical monuments. Remember, this is it applies in the news to Confederate monuments because that's what's so controversial. But really it means any structure that is 40 years or older.
But they did, they made the language broad, but it was, it happened in 2017. It was based on Confederate monuments. I mean,
absolutely.
Yeah, it
could
be applied elsewhere.
Look, it's, you know, that's what's actually controversial. I've heard people kind of compare it to other, you know, potential statues or monuments or memorials being affected. This is about Confederate monuments. And, So it is. And look, I understand why these things are controversial. They were built in the late 1800s, early 1900s, in memorial to Civil War dead. And that's really important to some people. But to a lot of others, they represent, oppression and a way of life that, you know, was oppressed generations. And, you know, I can understand not wanting to walk by a statue memorial dedicated to that, way of life.
The other part of this, though, and I talked about this in 2017, it didn't seem to matter, but it does, the statism versus federal, as much complaining as we do in Alabama about federal, you know, stepping on the rights of Alabamians and state law, they do the same thing. The state does the same thing to municipalities, whether it's plastic bags, minimum wage, or in this case, monuments. You pointed out that is a monument in a city park, not a state park. So whatever, if people can take the Confederate thing out of it for a second and just say, does a city have the right to remove some statue or some kind of obelisk that's in a city park? I mean, if they wanted to expand a building or do something else, I don't know why the state has any sway, any word in that, what happens inside a municipality.
You make a great point. I mean, from a conservative angle, yeah, from a federalism standpoint, meaning we like local government, yeah, why should the state intervene? And of course, you know, if you hear Gerald Allen, you've probably had him on, he makes a good argument about, you know, the reason why you need to preserve history, even the kind that we don't consider positive. The legislature all the time, yeah, we've got a Republican legislature, and yeah, they complain about federal mandates all the time, but mm-hmm. they themselves certainly issue plenty of mandates down to the city and county level. Part of that is our Constitution and how it sets up all the power in Montgomery, very little local control. But this is a situation where they reached further and went beyond the Constitution to say, hey, the state is going to stop you from making a local decision. And in this case, it's basically like, you know, you can get it, you can do it if you want. You're going to have to pay the state a fine.
I wonder, and in the case of Birmingham, that's Mayor Woodfin doing it. Did he have to run that through city council? Do you know, or is that just an executive branch decision?
I'm not aware of any meeting. He said he was going to do it. He promised the crowd. He spent the next day on the phone with Montgomery, making sure that basically he was fine. And one of the things that the Attorney General communicated to him was the limits of the law. Hey, I can't come and proactively stop you. All the law allows me to do is sue for this $25,000 penalty. I can't send the police up there. The law does not allow for that to be proactively. And so, you know, Marshall's getting criticized on both sides. He's being called, you know, white supremacist on Twitter. I saw some of that, which is nonsense. But he's also being criticized by the, you know, sons and daughters of the Confederacy by saying, hey, you know, why didn't you do more to save this statue? And his, you know, when you're getting it from both sides, but I mean, I kind of see it as going, you know, exercising his law, his job, and doing, you know, enforcing the law as it's written. You really don't have a choice of that when you're Attorney General.
Yeah, I like a situation where, whether the person likes it or not, which is not their job to tell us, but they do the job of enforcing the laws. I think that's, I'm a throwback to that. All right. So going forward, if a municipality decides they want to remove a monument, they could just go through this same process, pay the $25,000, and remove it, right? I mean, it would be up to the decision of a mayor or a council.
Yeah, and one step we're missing in this, as part of the law that does get talked about a lot, is that the city can always ask the state. It can always petition the state, get the state's permission. And so that is part of that law. I think it goes through the Alabama Historical Commission. So, if there is a legal process by which you can remove a statue. Without the permission of the state, that's when it becomes a penalty. That's when it becomes a violation of the law and a fine.
There we go. Coming right back. More with Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News, aldailynews.com. He'll tell you about getting that email in your inbox 6 days a week with the latest in Alabama and national news. Plus, we'll talk about special session. We had a quote. We had State Senator Chris Elliott said to us weeks ago that he didn't think there would be any specials. We'll find out what the latest out of Montgomery is on that when we return to our conversation with Todd right here on Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 12:35, FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. Continue our conversation with Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News, the website aldailynews.com. Once you get there, Todd, take it away. What do they do to get signed up for the email?
It's really easy, and it's free. It's just aldailynews.com. That's the homepage. Click subscribe at the top, enter your name and your email, and you'll be on the list. That's a daily email that goes out, running down all the news from the day, a lot from state news, from here in Montgomery, the state capital, but also from D.C. So much going on statewide and nationally, so it's a great time to be signed up.
Y'all go do it. You will love that email. All right, let's talk specials, special session. And with the, like you pointed out earlier, there are so many things, quite a few things left on the table because of the limited tightened schedule for this session because of coronavirus. So many of us thought, okay, well, that will be dealt with in special sessions, right? The governor will call a special session on this, that, and the other, and they'll get these things done. Then I had State Senator Chris Elliott on the show who had said, I don't think she's going to call, meaning the governor, she's going to call another state, any special sessions. What's your take on this, the latest in special session talk? What's the story?
You know, that it's exactly that. A lot of people have differing opinions about it. This time, 2 months ago, I would have told you it's a foregone conclusion. Of course they're going to have a special session. And the governor was saying kind of publicly that, look, she'll call as many that are necessary in order to get all these unpassed bills done and taken care of. A couple things happened. They met, they got the budgets done, so that's their basic constitutional responsibility. But remember, the session also ended really bitterly with the governor getting crossways with mainly the Senate leadership, and of course Senator Elliott down there. Really some bad blood, and you know, sometimes it takes time just to get over stuff like that, and I think they will, but I don't think anybody's eager to come back to Montgomery. The problem is there are two economic development laws that are expiring this year. The main one, the Alabama Jobs Act, this is the one that the state has used to attract these, you know, big companies like Airbus and Austal and, you know, some of the larger economic development prizes to the state, and it's expiring at the end of the year. The business community really wants that to be reauthorized. That's a big priority. But also there's the Growing Alabama Act that is more for like local industrial parks, and it's used more on a smaller scale locally. That's a big deal to local economic developers, and it expires in September. So those are two economic development issues that really need to get passed. Plus, you've got the civil immunity from coronavirus lawsuits bill that a lot of people are, especially in the business community, want passed. So I think the the public officials, even maybe the governor and the lawmakers, aren't very eager to reconvene for a legislative session. But I think they're going to have a lot of pressure from the business community to go ahead and do that. And that's why I think it's probably 50-50 at this point, but I think September, October, you could be looking at a special session.
Okay, I want to talk about some of the other things that could be in special, but tell me on the technical side, could the governor call a special and with the refusal of a quorum in the Senate or something like that, that it would never happen? Like, could the governor, can she compel when a session is called for people to show up, or could they play rough with her there?
Yes, right. The governor calls special sessions, and they're compelled to meet. I mean, I'm pretty sure that there's a provision of law that allows the Capitol Police to go and get them if they're not showing up. But in some cases, this has happened before. In some cases, the legislature will convene and adjourn, sine die, and just basically refuse to meet. So as long as you have a quorum, you could do that. I mean, that won't happen. They'll come to some kind. If there is a special session, if she calls it, then she will definitely have buy-in from the Senate leadership and House leadership. Now, remember, they were not on the same page at the end of this regular session. The House did not want to come back. The House leadership said, look, we can just do it in a special. Let's not come back to Montgomery. The coronavirus is running wild. We don't want to be there. But it was the Senate that insisted, specifically President Pro Tem Del Marsh. He insisted, hey, we've got to meet. We've got to get these budgets done. Let's go ahead and do it, not waste time in a special session. So there is some back and forth. They negotiate these things, but I would expect them to be on the same page.
All right. What about the prison issue here? I mean, we've talked about it for a while. There's the are the RFPs, right? Maybe it's different in prisons, but this request for build out on the prisons, and then that could be a deal between the executive branch and a private entity. Is that still happening?
Yes, the RFP is out there. I mean, the companies have submitted it. There's actually two companies that are competing now, and the way the RFP is written, I mean, it's not in stone, but the way it's written, we essentially are going to have two companies sharing this work, sharing the construction and leasing of these prison facilities. Now, that's not done yet. They still have to be negotiated and approved. And, you know, there's always a chance that the companies pull out, say, hey, we can't afford it, or the state doesn't agree to it. So, I mean, it's complicated. And this is a big, big project. It's not easy to get these things written and submitted. But yes, the state is still after building three new state prisons, male state prisons, with maybe a fourth option, a women's prison down the road.
Okay, so then the other issue here in looking at special, do you think anything's going to be, if they come back for a special, what do you think? Mental health with the prisons, or do you think they'd talk about medical marijuana? Do you think does the legislature, if Governor Ivey wants to use some of this money for broadband, for example, out of the Federal CARES Act money, if they decide that can be done, does it need the legislature to be able to spend the money that's been allocated, or can she just spend it? I mean, I'm scratching my head on a lot of this.
Well, specifically on broadband, the executive amendment that came over and the bill that passed in the legislature already allocates, I don't know, a couple hundred million to those technical, you could call it broadband. I mean, I think it's probably more realistically, more short-term mechanisms to get wireless, specifically for coronavirus impact. So that's already done. I don't think if there's a special session, it'll be much of the coronavirus money. I think, number one, economic development laws and the coronavirus immunity for businesses. I think that's probably top priority. I think the business community is going to be pushing hard for that. I agree on prisons. If they're going to come back anyway, I think she would include that, because there were a series of bills, I think about five bills between the House and the Senate that were ready to pass. I mean, they have been through committee. They are not controversial. People have been negotiating this. And this is kind of policy, criminal justice reform, prison reform. And that they would not be a huge lift to pass. Why not go ahead and include that? So business, economic development, prisons. I would not think that things like medical marijuana, controversial issues like that would be included in a call. unless there was an extraordinary session for just those kind of controversial issues. But one thing to keep an eye out for, and I didn't write about it today because it's a bigger issue and I need more time, and that's gambling. Remember that the governor's task force on gambling, or the governor's study group, I think it's called, is still meeting. In fact, they're meeting this week. I'm hearing a lot of conversation about negotiation going on between the entities that was really going on in earnest before coronavirus hit, but maybe it's still going on behind the scenes. If they come to an agreement, if the different entities around the state, the different gambling entities, come to an agreement, and this task force comes up with proposals that the governor's going to endorse, that I think would be perhaps its own special session. So that's a lot of ifs, right? A lot has to happen before that actually goes through.
Well, and throw the wrench into that, is the offer from the Porch Bandit Creek Indians, a compact, still on the table? Does it have a statute of limitation? I mean, does it, how long does it last?
Yeah, well, I consider that just, part and parcel to all this negotiation, right? They made an offer. They made a big, public, strong offer, talking about $1 billion. It had mixed reaction from lawmakers and everything, but that, they were out there. Their cards were on the table, pardon the pun. So I just consider that part of it. Any agreement, any policy, any proposal that they come up with, that the Porch Creeks are going to have play a big role in that. I don't know what that looks like. I've heard things about them essentially buying the other casinos around the state, buying these guys out that have basically been their competition for so long. Maybe there's some kind of way they can exist together. But one thing the Porch Creeks have been insistent on, and I think this is a really good point, is having a commission to regulate gambling in a state. They obviously operate in other states and that are regulated. I mean, next door in Mississippi, they at least have rules and laws that govern all this stuff. In Alabama, it's kind of in the wild, wild west. So I would look for that in any kind of proposal that comes out. How are we going to regulate this and tax it going forward?
All right, and before we wrap up, you can just give a cursory discussion of it, because I want people to check out the full thing through the Inside Alabama Politics and maybe get you on to talk about this in depth going forward. But you write paragraph after paragraph here about the question of Senate leadership. So Alabama Senate leadership, I mean, it seems like forever I've said Senate President Pro Tem Del Marsh. I don't remember saying anything else. So that could change?
Yeah, Del Marsh has been the leader of the Senate for 10 years. He's really the only one that has withstood this entire time. And we think, going back at least to the last century, he's the longest serving leader of the Senate as President Pro Tem. But he made a deal that he was only going to serve 2 years of this 4-year term as leader of the Senate and allow some of his, the folks under him to move up. That may not be happening. I mean, we had a session that was cut short. A lot of the things that he wanted to accomplish this session didn't happen. So we may not see that this year. We may see it next year. I don't know. But certainly he has earned the right. A lot of senators tell me he has earned the right to go out on his own terms, whether that's this year in a special session, at the beginning next year, or at the end next year. We don't know, but it's probably up to Dell, because they say he's earned it.
Okay, so just quickly, is there a short list of who might be next?
Well, yeah, Greg Reed. So Senator Greg Reed is the current majority leader, and so he's waiting in the wings. He's already sort of the anointed candidate. The question then would become who would get majority leader, which is a really important position, especially when it comes to winning elections and recruiting candidates and stuff like that. And I'm told that Clay Schofield, a senator from Gunnersville, a pretty young guy, I think he just turned 40, is gonna be Senate Majority Leader. So, but all that doesn't happen until Dell decides whether or not he wants to step down.
It's gonna be interesting. Do you know if Schofield is, for lack of a better term, is he in the Ivy camp or is he on the outside of the Ivy camp?
Well, I know that he has a pretty strong working relationship with the governor's office.
Okay.
Because he's the one that does confirmations, right? So every time that the Senate confirms nominees, he has to work with the governor's office to do that, which is important. But I wouldn't put him in a box in terms of, you know, being on somebody's side. I think the Senate, especially the Senate Republican caucus, is pretty tight-knit. And so if they're going to take sides, they're going to, you know, close ranks and protect their own.
There you go. Okay, remind folks again, if they have not, for some reason, signed up for your email, how to do it.
Real easy. Just aldailynews.com. That's the homepage. Click subscribe up at the very top because you're going to want to be on the email list that I send out to every morning.
All right. Yeah, we barely scratched the surface of what came out today. So y'all go check it out. And as always, Todd, man, I appreciate your time.
All right, Sean, be good.
All right, there he is, Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News, aldailynews.com. We're coming back. Take your phone calls at 343-0106.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Phone number 343-0106. Checking with my buddy Angelo at Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry. Let's talk precious metals here for a second, Angelo. And I guess we jump this part of the conversation all the time because you and I have had the conversation so many times. But why precious metals? Why should anybody give a darn about gold and silver?
Well, for one very good reason. If you look at things from an economics standpoint, and gosh knows I don't like to look at it from that standpoint, but you look at paper currency, you look at the fiat currency we're using right now, where the government starts printing, you know, printing checks, depositing money in people's accounts, they don't even bother to buy the paper to print the money. They just deposit it directly in your account.
Mm-hmm.
That either creates, you know, inflation, it creates recession, creates all sorts of issues. And you start looking globally at times when that has happened around the world, the only real safe way to protect yourself is to put some of your money, some of your investments into hard assets. And hard assets are typically gold and silver. Sometimes people also buy platinum, palladium, things like that. So if you're worried about your cash value going to nothing or the buying power of that cash dwindling significantly with the debt that the government is increasing, you buy some gold, you buy some silver, it's always going to have some level of value. It never will get valued down to zero. Always has some value.
Good point. All right. And people can get advice on the bigger scope of gold and silver down to the should I buy today, what did it do yesterday kind of advice from y'all when they come by the shop.
Sure. We love to talk to people about all this, make sure that they understand the what's and the whys and the wherefores of what we're trying to do with all this. And you go online, sometimes you can get overwhelmed. You see a picture on the computer screen. The thing looks pretty cool. When you get it in person, it's just not the same. If you come to Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry, you're going to be able to look at those items in hand, in person, and decide what is the right item, what is the right mix for you. And then you're going to walk out the door with a cool silver bar or an ounce of gold or whatever it is you want. You're going to have that in your pocket.
Great. Tell folks how to come see y'all.
Yeah, we're in Midtown at 2204 Government Street. Of course, you can check us out online, mobilebaycoins.com, and you can even do some of your shopping there for some of the jewelry and the cooler coins. And any questions, give us a call, 725-1590.
Hey, thanks, Angelo.
Have a good one, Sean.
You do. Angelo checking in from Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry. Hey, by the way, too, looking through the text line here, and this popping up, so I'll tell everybody who didn't text about it, yay, celebrate, the stream is back. That's right. It's a third. So it's a third party thing for what it's worth. So we send the feed of this radio station to a third party that then puts it on all, you know, we've talked about it. You can get it on TuneIn Radio, that free app for your smartphone, so you can listen to the station online. TuneIn Radio, it's what Dalton and I use. It's bulletproof, man. It's been great. You can use that one. Also, of course, if you go to our website there on your desktop, you can stream us there as well. But we have a third party that has to do the magic, whatever they do, to get it to those platforms. They've been down since sometime in the wee hours, and I know we've been fielding many, many texts and phone calls and emails about that. Everything's good now, back up and good to go. All right, so good news there. A couple other items here. We're going to talk about these more next hour. But one of them, I know my buddy Ben just sent the story along as well. to us. Google facing a $5 billion lawsuit for tracking private internet use. Okay, so you know that the private mode browser? I don't know, I see it on the phone. I don't think I've ever engaged it, which actually the missus told me I should do that when I'm looking for airplane fares. Let's see if she sent me a quick text on the reasoning there. But there's, I think she said because somehow if you want to keep the fares low when you're searching for trips, you do private browser. I haven't done it, but Google sued yesterday in a proposed class action suit for illegally invading privacy of millions of users by tracking their internet use through browsers set in private mode. So we'll get to that one coming up in just a little bit. Also, more questions over the monuments issue here. You heard Todd kind of lay it out, and I wanted to, the question I was asking about municipalities was, you take out the monuments of any sort, of what they are for, just say they're just about whatever. My argument was in 2017, not dealing with whether they're Confederate monuments or not, but shouldn't it be up to the city to make that decision, where state government, you know, will say, hey, federal overreach, and I'm with them, I agree. I want that control at a state level as much as possible, but the feds will put a heavy hand on you there. Well, then in the same case, when the state legislature, and I know a lot of it's set up in the Constitution and the system, which I think we should probably change, it has those same mandates, though, that they complain about from the feds. It has those same mandates coming down to counties and municipalities. And I think that's it's frustrating. It's frustrating. And that's what, shouldn't a municipality be allowed to take for a second, take what that monument is, that statue is, out of it? Should the city be allowed to make that decision? Although people will argue, okay, you're going to have a system where you have a mayor or a council take something down and it goes and it's in a warehouse, and then the next person comes in, they put it back up. Yeah, but that's government. That's the voice of the people, right? Why should that be different in this case? Going to be one of the interesting parts of it. All right, then we'll also get the latest from our staff meteorologist, Dr. Bill Williams, on Tropical Storm Cristobal. I'll do a little a recast of what he said earlier. This is going to be something that most likely right now, he said still, it's not moving, so it's tough to make the projections, but will be, he thinks, going into the west of us somewhere, probably central Louisiana coast, maybe a little west of there, but it will be a big rainmaker for us by Sunday into Monday. That's when that storm's really going to be impacting our area. But I did look at, like I said, I looked at the marine forecast and it's impacting that big time by this weekend. Very high seas out there in the Gulf. So go ahead and plan maybe a onshore weekend for this weekend. All right, coming back, this is cool. So our friends out at the grounds have a chance for you to get something I've never even thought of. Drive-through fair food. I mean, if you wanted to get fair food, you've had to make a special trip. You go to the fair to get, that's where you get fair food. But what if you could drive by and pick up some fair food? They got a pretty cool thing coming up we're going to talk about with us when we get back right here on Midday Mobile. Once again, phone number, text line 343-0106.